You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. UFC Vegas 45 Lewis and Dawkins review show starts now!
Oh my God, look at that singing voice. What a gorgeous singing voice on that man. What is up, my friends? Welcome to the final preview show of the year. We thank you for joining us. This is, of course, the UFC Vegas 45 preview show here on MMA Fighting. And you already know the crew. That man, first of all, is my Arizona brother, Jose Youngs. We have the finest producer in the business, E. Casey Layden. I am Sean Oshadi, and let's get to it, fellas, because there is much to discuss here. UFC Vegas 45, it's here. We are wrapping up 2021 with a nice little bow, little final UFC card of the year, and we are closing the year out the only way we can, with the big boys, Derek Lewis, Chris Daukaus. Gentlemen, it's a decent card. You look up and down. I'd say there's some nice names on there. Wonder Boy, Bilal Muhammad. That's a very good co-main event, right? But let's start with the heavyweights. Derek Lewis, Chris Daukaus. You have Derek Lewis coming in here off that fairly lopsided loss in what was a really, I don't know, what do you call it? A bizarre interim title fight? Bizarre that it happened, I would say. And then on the other side of this, you have Chris Daukaus. Year two of his UFC career, and he's already getting thrown to the wolves out here. Jose, I'll throw it to you first. What's the intrigue here for this main event for you? What's the storyline of the question that really you're keeping an eye on the most?
I would say that what I'm mostly intrigued is just, how would I say this? New blood at the top of the heavyweight division, I would say. I want to see if Chris Daukaus can really kind of crack that top five, because I feel like that we've been going around in circles for a bit. I think the addition of Jairzinho after he knocked out Alistair Overeem was kind of a breath of fresh air, but then he's kind of laid an egg in a few fights and got decapitated by Francis Ngannou, as you do inside the octagon. But Chris Daukaus, I think Chris Daukaus was tabbed. It's like him, Tom Aspinall, who's the crazy Russian guy that like chokes people out with his biceps or forearms, I should say, Romanov, like yeah. All these guys at the heavyweight division, because for years it was always like the heavyweight division is like the guys that are like, you know, on the other side of 35, they don't have to cut weight, so they can last longer, like their fighting careers. They might not be the most technical fighters, but they can hit really hard and put you to sleep with the touch of death. I mean, I think even Corey Sandhagen, he was on the A side once. He even said he doesn't like watching MMA fighting because there really is no technicality. It's just you can go in there and touch a guy on the chin and the person's all of a sudden taking a nap inside in front of 30,000 people. But I think with the addition of Ciryl Gane, Tom Aspinall, Daukaus, Romanov, these are all different breeds of heavyweight. Each one is a completely different style of fighting, and of course Derek Lewis is the very definition of that old guard of the UFC heavyweights. Big guy, doesn't look like Ciryl Gane or Francis Ngannou, touches you and you go to bed. Funny guy, I think top five sound clip creator in UFC history. So intrigue for me is probably about an 8.5 out of 10, solely because I want to see if Chris Daukaus can finally give new blood to the top five of the UFC heavyweight division.
It's funny. I'm glad that you mentioned the state of this division, right? Because it does feel fresh and interesting in a way that we really haven't seen for a pretty long time, I would say. And I like that you mentioned Tom Aspinall, because I want to circle back to that in a second. But first, Derek Lewis, you said it, the old guard. I mean, Casey, you look at this man. He is 36 years old. He has been around at this point seemingly forever. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get when you have Derek Lewis in a main event. You get swinging and banging. You get big knockouts. Lots of just kind of standing up when someone's trying to grapple him. But overall, you look at his body of work in the UFC, it's actually underrated in my mind. It has been for a long time, right? 24 appearances. He's won 16 of those. He's tied for the most KOs in UFC history. He wins more than he loses. And I mean, hell, every time you count him out, I counted him out against Curtis Blaydes earlier this year. He goes and knocks him out. And yet here we are once again going down the only road we ever know. He is the underdog coming into this fight, like always. He's the underdog. He's been the underdog in 8 of his last 10 fights.
Wow.
Does it surprise you this time? Because I have to admit, I'm a little surprised this time. Like, this man just fought for an interim title.
Is it surprising that he's an underdog? I mean, this is a what have you done for me lately type of sport. And we just remember him losing to a much more technically sound fighter in Ciryl Gane. I think we were all kind of, I think there were a good amount of people that picked Gane to beat Lewis, but I think in such the way he just kind of deconstructed Lewis and made Lewis just kind of a shell of himself and just he couldn't do anything. Did Lewis even land anything significant in that strike versus Gane?
Not really.
Yeah, pretty much a shutout. Dawkins, this is a giant step up in competition. And that's why it's a great fight. This is a great main event. Usually I kind of frown upon throw the heavyweights at the top of the card, but this one's legit. Dawkins says he's 32, 33, something. So he's in his prime athletically, but young for heavyweights. I just like this fight a lot. I am surprised just because of how much popular Lewis is. But like I said, is Dawkins Ciryl Gane? I don't think so. But that's what we're going to find out. And apparently a lot of bettors think that just, you know, being a faster technical striker is the way to beat Derek Lewis. And it's not wrestling anymore. It's just you just have to be a better striker and just don't swing and bang with him. Because if you swing and bang, you will lose to Derek Lewis.
Jose, do those odds feel right to you? Like, are you a little surprised that Derek Lewis continued, even at this point in his career, he still can't get any respect in these type of fights?
I'm not surprised he's the underdog solely, like Casey said. What have you done for me lately? And he seems to lose to these high-level tech. And even the fights that he's won, like Alexander Volkov is a technical striker. I would not describe Alexander Volkov as a one-punch knockout kind of heavyweight. He's a guy that'll keep you at distance and kind of pitter-patter you into oblivion. And he was, what, like 2 minutes away from beating Derek Lewis until Derek Lewis, as he does, touches you on the chin and you die. So if Chris Dawkins can do that for 25 minutes inside of a tiny octagon, let's not forget, this is a real tiny octagon.
That's a great point.
So I should say I'm surprised that those odds, based solely on there's not a lot of room to move in there. If this was a giant octagon, I would probably give Chris Dawkins a little more of the edge. But
I forgot
Derek Lewis can lose 4 rounds in 4 minutes and still win. So anything is possible, but I'm not surprised he's the underdog.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, also want to point out, too, that's the betting line. Tapology was just straight picks. More people are picking Lewis in just a straight pick'em type fight. So betting odds, Dawkins, but in straight just who's going to win, 56% of fans are picking Lewis over Dawkins, which is still pretty close, but not quite. He's not quite the underdog in that sense.
That is an interesting observation to point out, though, because you're right. I feel like those two usually correlate, right? Like if a fan vote and the odds are usually going in a similar direction. Jose, you started this conversation by mentioning sort of the state of this division and the young talent coming up. And I want to key in on that for a second, because you gaze around and we have a lot of young talent, a lot of prospects, but it's really two main ones that I think a lot of people focus on, right? It's Chris Dawkins, and then out there in England, you have Tom Aspinall. Both are really, really in similar positions in their UFC career. I mean, both are 4-0, 4 finishes, and they feel like they're on similar paths. But the trajectories and the strategies of how they're doing this, that's what's interesting to me, because they couldn't be more different, right? You have one man out there honestly, just being very honest with everybody about wanting to take the slow road. And that's Aspinall, obviously, of wanting to work his way up very slowly. He's young in this game. And then Chris Daukaus on the other side is the complete opposite. He is on year two in the UFC, as we mentioned, and he's fighting our number four ranked heavyweight here in MMA fighting rankings in his fifth UFC fight. So two questions for both of you guys. I mean, you look at how both men are treating their careers. Which road do you feel like is the smarter decision right now for where these guys are, and whose future are you higher on between these two?
I'll start. I think it really depends, and I think the answer is Chris Daukaus is, what, 33, 32, and Tom Aspinall's not even 30. So I think if I'm Chris Daukaus, I want the fast path. Also, he's a former cop, so he's had the full-time job. He wants to fight and win now. And Tom Aspinall has made his case like he wants the slow build. Also, let's not forget, Tom Aspinall's teammate is Darren Till. And we saw what happened when Darren Till got shot up the rankings real quickly.
Also, that's a great point.
He can't buy a win inside the octagon. So part of me has to think Tom Aspinall saw his teammate Darren Till just get the rocket strapped to him, and it didn't really work out. He got thrown into the wolves, and he's still a big name, still a popular fighter, still headlining cards. If he's healthy, he's probably going to headline the London card with Tom Aspinall underneath him. So maybe Tom's dad is his coach, if I'm not mistaken. So Tom's dad is probably like, let's take a step back too, because I have a feeling that Tom Aspinall has probably been offered, you know, the Junior Dos Santos and of the world where before Junior was gone, or the Overeems of the world. And maybe he's like, hey, maybe I'm not ready for that. Cause you beat Junior Dos Santos, you're going to fight top five. And maybe Tom Aspinall is like, let's pump the brakes on that quickly. But I don't know if these two will ever fight for a title, but I would, in terms of Daukaus and Aspinall, but I have a feeling that both of them will be top five probably by the end of 2022. And then we could talk about them fighting, because Chris Daukaus is very honest too. UFC doesn't want us to fight because we're the new blood of this division. They don't want one of us to knock the other one off, which I commend him for. As you said, Tom Aspinall is very honest. Chris Daukaus is also very honest in possibly fighting Tom Aspinall. So I'm very much looking forward to that eventual fight.
Casey, which strategy do you like best, and who do you feel like has the higher ceiling?
Overall, I've been more impressed with Aspinall, but Chris Daukaus just hasn't had the proper opponent on the other side. And tomorrow night's the night, you know, that's going to prove to see how good he is against, you know, the A-level heavyweights in the sport. Overall, but I think has Aspinall actually turned down? Do we know? Has he been offered higher level fights?
We don't know publicly.
He's just been very upfront about sort of the road he wants to take with this.
Has Doc has been like, if I beat, is he kind of one of those guys like, I'm ready for the fight for the title
Stipe,
now?
He called out Stipe after his last fight.
So. Oh, okay, that's what I thought.
So there you go.
You know what?
And on the flip side, Tom Aspinall is calling out Sergei Spivak after his wins. No offense to Sergei Spivak, but you're not Stipe Miocic.
Well, you know, calling out Stipe too is almost you're not going to get it too. So it's a nice call out for a fight you're not going to get too by Daukaus. I like both their approaches. I think as long as you keep winning and the fans, you're a heavyweight and still knock people out and finish fights. You know, I think both are winning strategies and for a prize fighter at heavyweight in the UFC.
I have to say, I do feel, just in my opinion, I feel as though Tom Aspinall maybe has the higher ceiling, and I do sort of enjoy the approach he's taking, because you're right, Jose. He has seen firsthand what being sort of sped up the ranks can do to someone like Darren Till, and now we have Darren Till here on the MMA Hour this week talking about how he needs to find his confidence again and he doesn't know where his confidence went, that type of thing. But it is a big, big spot here for Chris Daukaus, man. I mean, the stakes involved in this fight, if he wins, he's 5-0 in the UFC, and you beat Derek Lewis, you're basically that next guy in line, right? Like, we have Francis Ngannou, Ciryl Gane going next year. Depending on how this John Jones situation plays out, where do you feel like this one puts the winner, Jose?
I think if that is a good question. I think it would line them up with a fight with Stipe if John Jones doesn't show up. Because if John Jones shows up, give me Stipe Miocic, John Jones all day. Or if you just want to give John Jones the title fight, I'm perfectly fine with that too. And then the loser of the interim of the title unification fight can fight, you know, Stipe or Daukaus. I like how Daukaus sold the Stipe fight. It's firefighter versus police officer, and he's like, that could sell out. Like, he's like, I'll go to Cleveland, he could come to Philly, we can sell out those arenas. Because I'm pretty sure, like, if They're going to what? They're going to Columbus, right? I don't know if that has a heavyweight title fight. Forget that. Or not heavyweight title fight. That has a main event. Forget that. Stipe versus Chris Dawkins, if you win, should headline Columbus in Ohio. Make it happen. But the John Jones is just the wild card. They're clearly going to be top four? Where's Derek Lewis sitting right now?
We have
number four.
He'd slot right in there at four. Or who's blowing? Blades, I would assume?
Yeah.
Maybe Blades elevates, but maybe they just swap even though Lewis beat him. It's just a whole mess at the top five at heavyweight. But they'll probably sit at four or five, and then I personally would like to see the winner of this fight Stipe, because I want to see Stipe fight again. But I understand Stipe's perspective, wanting to fight for the title / waiting for John Jones. So let's wait for John Jones' answer, and then I can answer this again.
What do you think, Casey? Is the winner of this one fight away from a belt, kind of right in that belt picture? Where do you see it?
I think if Lewis wins big and Francis beats Gone, then I think that's an easy. This is okay. This is all in the assumption that
that's not an easy rematch. That's not.
That's not. I would love to see that rematch, but this is under the assumption John Jones isn't fighting right now. It's under the assumption that Stipe is still out of the picture too for various contract reasons. But if Lewis wins, this is a big win for Lewis. If he wins, I do believe he can fight for a title against Francis, and we just kind of ignore that first fight. That was just a weird one. And if they do that again somehow, then that would kind of be amazing. they can fight another. There's no way this is going to the bell, and of course it goes. But for Dawkins, if he wins, Stipe does seem like the fight to make. I just don't. I think he needs a. To be put on a pay-per-view. Has he even been featured on pay-per-view? Dawkins, I feel like he's a fight night guy right now.
I mean, his last fight was on 266, the Shamil knockout.
On the main card?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, the UFC, they like to kind of prep fans for like, oh, you're going to start paying to watch this guy fight. Like an Nate Diaz. Does he have like a free card? No, he's fought on pay-per-views for a while now. So I feel Dawkins just doesn't have the name recognition yet, even if he beats Lewis. So the Stipe fight will make a lot of sense for him afterwards.
Yeah, man, I think the answer to this obviously just comes down to John Jones, right? Yeah, it's just John Jones. If the UFC is going to try to screw over John Jones again next year, or maybe, who knows what John Jones is going to get into, whatever trouble he's going to get into this year.
John Jones screws himself over again.
Exactly. I feel as if there's a very real chance that the winner of this fight might be that next person in line then, other than, the John Jones situation. Stipe is just such a weird case because you never know what he's going to do, with what kind of a fights he wants, what he wants to accept. Seems like he wants to just get thrown back into the title. So it's a tough situation, but that heavyweight division, man, is in a really interesting, nice place right now. And in particular, like we said, with all the young talent coming up. And this is an interesting one for me. This is a really intriguing one to see where Chris Dawkins is. Let's make the picks, fellas. Jose, where are you leaning on this?
I'm going to pick Chris Dawkins solely because I've talked myself into wanting the Stipe Miocic fights. I also think Ciryl Gane is going to be defending his heavyweight title against John Jones by the end of the year. So I'm going to say Stipe versus Chris Dawkins. I've talked myself into it. I think Derek Lewis at any point in that fight, it could just murder Chris Dawkins. But I just think Chris Dawkins is clicking on all cylinders right now. He's been... has he been in any sort of danger in any of his fights? Or it's been pretty one-sided.
It's first round knockout.
He has four wins in the UFC. They were all by knockout, right? He has five knockouts in four fights. He knocked out Shamil twice in one fight at UFC 266. So for that, I'm picking Chris Dawkins.
How about you, Casey?
Derek Lewis. The small cage is going to be a big factor in this. Ciryl Gane is just better than Derek Lewis technically, and it was just and they bought the big octagon in Houston, and Ciryl Gane used that to his advantage very, very smartly. But I think Derek Lewis is gonna. I think Derek Lewis actually fights better in the Apex with no crowd, no pressure. You have that hometown pressure. Right. I think he'll fight a little better tonight, tomorrow night, and. Nothing against Dawkins, but this is a big jump up in competition, and I think Lewis. I think Lewis is better than the performance we saw in his last fight. That's basically it. But if Dawkins wins, I'll be super impressed. It's not that he can't be Lewis. He hasn't had the opportunity for us to see how good he is. And that's what Saturday night is.
I would say big jump up in competition is almost an understatement, right? Like this is Derek Lewis forever gets doubted on these type of fights. And it never makes sense to me because these are the type of fights that he wins ultimately, mm-hmm. right? Like he loses to the best of the best. He loses in the title fights and often it's a wash in those fights. But outside of that, like Chris Daugust would be the worst person to beat Derek Lewis since like 2015, Sean Jordan, right? Like these are the fights he wins. He wins these type of fights every time a young up and comer is trying to come up and make a name off him. It just doesn't really work unless your name is Ciryl Gane and you're that special caliber. Is Chris Daugust that special caliber? He might be, but I think I have to agree with you right now, Casey. I think I have to lean towards the big boy, the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. We'll see though, man. I mean, lots of intrigue in this one. It is an interesting fight to close out the year.
Before we move off the main event, we keep talking about people underestimating Derek Lewis and everything. He has a record for heavyweight KOs, correct? Or KOs?
He has a record for all-time KOs.
He's tied with Vitor Belfort and Matt Brown for most ever.
Yeah.
Okay. We talk about underselling Derek Lewis. The guy is a UFC Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, absolutely. I made this argument earlier in the year when he beat Curtis Blaydes out of nowhere. Kind of is low-key becoming like a Hall of Famer right under our eyes, right? Like he is just someone who has been in this top four, top five for the entirety of his career, basically. And that's if you can't win a title, it's longevity. And he's getting that longevity, especially in this division. I would vote for him for a Hall of Fame. It's a weird thing.
It's a great thing to say out loud. Derek Lewis, UFC Hall of Famer.
I mean, hey, just put together the montage of him standing up from guard. Like, that's enough for me. I'm in.
It doesn't exist.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury. The art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
One quick aside, actually, before we move on to this co-main event, and this is maybe a weird question, fellas, but should this event even be happening? And here's what I mean by that, right? I want to explain this because back in the day, Casey, I'm sure you certainly remember this, Jose, you probably too. The UFC liked to close the year with this big pay-per-view, and it would be this nice capper to the year, and you know we would kind of head into the new year with a lot of momentum. We just came off this incredible high at UFC 269, two title fights, big upsets, all this drama in Las Vegas. And now we're just right back here at the Apex. And it's not a bad card. It's not a bad card by any means. But our pal Ariel Helwani made this comparison to me, and it feels apt. It kind of just feels like the Pro Bowl, just kind of getting thrown in the week after the Super Bowl, right? Like, it does feel like a bit of an anticlimax, no?
It's it's weird. It's the ESPN era. That's all I gotta say. It's just an ESPN thing. I mean, because like there's no New Year's card anymore because ESPN is so, you know, all in of college football. You know, that's what I assume. So there's no New Year's card. That was kind of a thing forever. For the last 10 years, I would be in Vegas for New Year's every freaking year. But now with ESPN, like, oh, I'm at home. Cool. Fireworks. You know, just, it's weird. It's weird. It doesn't make sense, but they got content.
Also, the Pro Bowl is before the Super Bowl now.
It is now, but it used to be afterwards, and nobody cared about it. It would be the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Also in Hawaii.
The whole thing is...
Do you remember a few years back when the UFC, they were killer for us, but they would do three cards. One time they did a fight night, a pay-per-view, and then the Sunday they did another fight night.
So and that was BJ, did. That was BJ Penn, Frankie Edgar, and it was depressing.
It just felt weird to see a smaller card after the pay-per-view. And that's what it's kind of feels
so that
like.
That was 175, I believe, and then the next night was the Ultimate Fighter finale, if I remember correctly. So like they were the coaches, so they fought at the top or something like that. But the three cards in 3 days was tough, and it was Paige versus Rose, and then Frankie Chad, and then Connor Aldo, and then before that at 189, they had Jake Ellenberger and Wonder Boy the Sunday after Connor and Chad Mendez, and there was like 40 people in the crowd. So they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
That was that spinning hook kick knockout, too. It was like one of the best knockouts of Wonderboy's career, and no one saw it.
And low key, there was a couple welterweights on the undercard named Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah.
There were. Amen. Look at that transition. Speaking of Wonderboy, let's talk about this co-main event. Stephen Thompson, Bilal Muhammad. It feels like a very big crossroads here for both men because you have Bilal. He's undefeated over his last six. He's coming off that. We went over Damian Maia. And his whole story, his whole, like, this second half of his career has just been waiting a long, long time to get a real chance at a top-ranked guy at 170. Obviously, the Leon Edwards weirdness, kind of, you throw that to the side. But now he finally has this opportunity here against Wonderboy. And then you have Stephen Thompson, who is seemingly the youngest 38-year-old in MMA history. Like, the dude looks like he's 25. I don't actually understand how he's as old as he is, but he is sneaky up there in age for this division. And he said this week on the MMA Hour that he wants to be the oldest UFC fighter ever. But it just does feel like this is kind of the last chance for a title run, right? Like, he just got beat by Gilbert Burns. This is now or never for him. Jose, what's your initial take on this matchup, and who in your opinion needs this more?
Stephen Thompson needs this real bad. The UFC's kind of like, I know Stephen Thompson just announced he signs a contract, but you know, you lose a couple in a row and you're close to 40. The UFC has kind of made a habit lately of letting some fighters go, like Junior and Overeem and Rumble. And I guess Rumble hadn't fought in a long time. Yoel Romero, like, there's a lot of fighters that are getting released by the UFC that kind of catch people by surprise. But then you see the amount of people they're signing off of the Contender Series, and they're like, oh, they need to cut one 38-year-old to bring in five 26-year-olds. So Stephen Thompson for sure needs this win more than Bilal Muhammad. Bilal Muhammad is a fan favorite. He has his place on the desk. He's always going to be on camera, interviewing fighters and what have you. But in terms of this fighting career, a loss to Steve – like, who's Bilal Muhammad lost to? Jeff Neal, Vicente Luque, and I want to say one more. Like, he's
mine.
Losing.
No, he's mine. I think I'm on your point.
I want to say Joban. Did he lose to Joban a long time ago?
That was his UFC debut. Yeah.
Okay, so he drops his UFC debut, and I'm pretty sure that was like a fight of the night. So good on him for having an epic fight of the night. And then he's lost to top five welterweights. Stephen Thompson's been a top five welterweight for what? How long? Since the Johnny Hendricks win. So a loss to someone that only loses to top five welterweights in the world probably means Stephen Thompson is no longer a top five welterweight in the UFC. So Stephen Thompson needs this win way more than Bilal Muhammad.
Casey, do you agree? Is this a bigger fight for Wonderboy or Bilal, do you think?
Wonderboy times a billion. Yeah, sorry. But Bilal, great personality. He's a good welterweight. Wonderboy has been a great welterweight for years, but he's just not the greatest welterweight, and that's been his issue. With Usman basically steamrolling everyone else in the division, Wonderboy is in such a prime spot to a big win tomorrow night and maybe one more win. He gets to fight Usman. Usman needs fresh competition, and we haven't seen Usman Wonderboy. It's an interesting style matchup. and fans like Wonder Boy. So, but if he loses two losses in a row against what do we have, Mom? Blah ranked at? Is he even top 10? Do we have him top 10?
I think he's outside of the top 10 for us. Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be, I know Pettis was unranked when he lost to Pettis, but this, as far as like a true welterweight, this would be a pretty bad welterweight loss for Wonder Boy. And I think people are going to be like, oh, you're old now, dude. And no, I think the UFC will move on from him if he loses this fight, and they'll put all their kind of promotional push behind Bilal. So this is a giant fight for Wonder Boy, but also a very, very winnable fight, and a fight I expect him to win rather convincingly.
Also, you have to imagine he's feeling the desperation right now, right? Like, this is it. This is the moment for him. Like, he's a realist. He knows it. He understands sort of where he's at in his career.
I mean, he signed a 6-fight deal. I mean, it sounds like he's basically intending to retire in the UFC, or just keep on adding onto it. So, yeah, it's all or nothing tonight. I mean, I gotta imagine I don't know. He must, he hides that pressure very well. Cause I was like, oh boy.
He does.
Yeah.
He compartmentalizes really well. Like he's really grounded in a way that I think few fighters are. Like, he really seems to have a good sense of his self-awareness and where he sort of stands in all of this. But there is one aspect to this, and you sort of mentioned it, Casey, or alluded to it, that I think helps Stephen Thompson. And that's the fact that we've kind of been talking about him versus Usman for a really long
time. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Come on.
He stepped on the cable.
He took one of his shoes. All right, we're back.
I have no idea what that was, but right, we've been talking. To get back on what I was saying, we've been talking about this fight for a really long time now, it feels like. And Kamaru Usman's been going through this welterweight division. He's been beating all the challengers. But it does stand out there that Stephen Thompson is a different type of stylistic matchup than he's ever faced before. Jose, is this a fight that still intrigues you? Like, do you feel like this is one that we still need to see before all of this is over for Kamaru Usman, this Wonder Boy fight?
That's a really good question. I mean, selfishly, I want to see it because Kamaru Usman's what, the pound-for-pound best fighter on planet Earth right now on a lot of people's rankings. Is he number one in ours? I would assume so.
Oh, absolutely. It's unanimous too. Like, it's all eight of us.
Yeah. A few things we
there's not really an argument for anyone being above Finn unless like John Jones comes back and wins the heavyweight title. But Kamaru Usman versus blank interests me, but Kamaru Usman versus people I haven't seen him fight interests me. Like, anytime, I've said this a million times, anytime you see the best do anything against anybody, I'm interested in. I don't care if it's Chris Cyborg versus Sinead Cavan. A lot of people think Cyborg is the greatest featherweight female fighter ever. I know Amanda Nunes beat her, but a lot of people still consider Chris the best. She fights, I'm interested. John Jones fights, I'm interested. Kamaru Usman fights, I'm interested. And I want to see new blood. So will this ever happen? I doubt it, but I want it, which means we're probably not going to get it because nothing good happens to me when I want fights. Or they'll take 3 years to book like they did Brian Ortega and Korean Zombie. So I want to see it, but it probably won't happen.
I don't know, man. A funny thing happened in 2021 with this division because this division was really log jammed for a really, really long time. Like, it was a frustrating division to follow for a really long time because of all the Masvidal rematches. And just, it was very slow to get Colby fights out there. But now it does feel like it's kind of cleared up a little bit. Like, you have Leon Edwards. He seems like he's kind of the shoe-in guy right now, but you never know with him. It's his luck. Something could happen and you could just lose that spot tomorrow. Colby's out of the picture. Masvidal's out of the picture. It's really just Vicente Luque that's left outside of Leon. Obviously, Hamzat Shamayev, you never know. He's lurking. But Casey, it kind of feels like Wonderboy could be one win away or just right there thrown into that title picture if he can do something spectacular here.
Does my audio sound okay?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I changed my mic.
It sounds better, actually.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I actually had the wrong mic on. I just realized that. Yeah, I know. Rookie mistake. The question, what was the question? Wonder Boy?
I mean, it feels like right now, timing is everything in this game, right?
Yeah.
Timing has not worked out for Wonder Boy in this division over the last couple of years, but it does feel like right now there's a moment where it's just kind of Vicente Luque, Leon Edwards, and no one else. Hamzat Shamayev is lurking, but that's it. And so Stephen Thompson could slide in, it feels like to me, with a spectacular performance.
Well, and honestly, I don't see why there's kind of this big kind of, not controversy, but like, man, Stephen Wonderboy could fight for a title. I mean, he only fought against Woodley, right? He didn't fight. Did he lose any other title fights? Am I forgetting something?
No, I mean, he fought the back-to-back against Woodley.
Yeah, then, so this one's a new fighter. So it's not like, you know, it's not a trilogy fight against a guy he lost against, a guy he fought twice. So I absolutely see no reason why Wonderboy wouldn't fight for a title. Now, are we worried about win streaks, you know, coming off just one fight win streak? Nah, that could be whatever. But we've seen a lot crazier things in title fights. So I personally love Usman Wonderboy. It'll be interesting because, you know, Usman, you know, my fighter of the year, but all three of his victories this year were primarily striking. And it'll be really interesting to see if Usman can actually outstrike Wonderboy, or we have to kind of go back to that old Usman in a sense and just kind of grind out a 25-minute fight, which is probably the smartest way to beat Wonderboy. But no, Usman's a different fighter now, so I think that fight's solely interesting. And if beating Bilal is all it takes to fight Usman, cool. But I think it's gonna be one more fight though. Either way,
yeah. I agree with you. Also, I go for it.
I want to add one thing. Also, Kamaru Usman has talked a lot about maybe not fighting much longer, so we might not get that fight solely because Kamaru's not available. Like, everyone's heard his dad, where you made a lot of money, but where were you type talk he had, and he takes 9 to 10 weeks away from his daughter. We might lose out on that fight, and it might not be because Wonderboy, might not be the UFC or Wonderboy's fault. Kamaru Usman just might not fight that much longer, and he wants these money fights.
That's a fair point, and I hope that doesn't happen, because ultimately this is one of the most intriguing stylistic matchups, to me at least, left for Usman, just in the sense of, I'm sure Kamaru would win, but I just want to see it. Like, I just want to see how he would handle that different type of a challenge. And one thing, too, that's sort of in the back pocket for Stephen Thompson that helps him out in this situation, we mentioned that there's nobody else really up there other than Leon Edwards and Luque. He beat Luque, 2 years ago. And it was a really great fight. It was an awesome fight. Fight of the night. So that helps him out quite a bit. Gentlemen, predictions. Where are you leaning on this one? Jose, let's start with you.
Stephen Thompson, by decision, he beats a lot of guys by keeping, especially in 3-round fights, you don't see a lot of crazy knockouts by him. I think Bilal Muhammad has, I'm going to look it up right now because he has like a crazy number. Yeah, he has 19 wins, 14 have reached the scorecards, and 2 of his 3 losses have reached the scorecard. So a 3-round fight in a small octagon, I'm just going to pick Stephen Thompson to win by decision. I don't think it's going to be like a blowout, but it's going to be the definition of 10-9, 10-9. 10-9, 30-27, Stephen Thompson.
How about you, Casey?
I'm on riding board with Jose. I think Stephen Thompson is just a better fighter. And I think you should get a solid 30, a true 30-27. And just, use that little karate and just bounce around the cage and, you know, just sidekick and, you know, throw his little cool little cross and, you know, be quicker.
We were talking about Derek Lewis having a massive jump up in competition. Like, what was it? This Diego Lima, and then I'm not like Leon Edwards with short notice, and then like 40-something-year-old Damian Maia, and then Wonderboy, like top 5. Like, just here you go, Bilal Muhammad. See if you can hang.
I love it. I love it, though. He's been waiting a while for it. Yeah.
I like the matchup. I mean,
love it.
It also
makes sense. Like, when this was announced, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't hate it.
Yeah,
that's when you know you get good matchmaking, when you see it and it's just like, oh yeah, that's a great call. So basically, it seems like both of you guys are calling this to just be a normal Stephen Wonderboy Thompson fight where he wins by I wouldn't say boring decision, but a very technical decision where you kind of know where it's headed from the first few seconds of the fight. Yeah. And I agree with you. I think this is going to be a 30-27 his way, and this welterweight division might just get a little more interesting, man. But hey, let's look outside of those top 2 fights now. What else is catching your guys' eye? Because there's a lot going on in this card. There's a lot of names that people know. Obviously, Angela Hill's jumping in last second. You got Carlos Diego Ferreira. You got Mateus Gamrot. Cub Swanson. Name. Hit me, Jose.
There's one name, and that's Mateus Gamrot. Casey knows I was going to bring this up. I've been asking for Mateus Gamrot to be in the UFC forever before when he was at KSW. We interviewed the president of KSW, and like the third question, I was like, give me an update on Mateus Gamrot. Just injects his fights into my body. And then he signs to the UFC, stumbles against Guram. I actually scored for Gamrot. Guram hasn't even fought since, and I'm very hyped for his return, too. Have him fight Patty on the same card Khamzat fights Darren Till. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Send me the check, UFC. Derek Fahad is obviously a very high-level grappler, and he made weight. Praise God, he made weight. Mateus Gamrot is also a very high-level grappler. I think this is the fight that Mateus Gamrot will lurch into the top 10. Former champ of KSW. I am all on, like, I wish he got the treatment that, like, Manel Cape or Manel Kopp and Yuri got. Like, they came in and, like, remember, Manel Kopp was the backup for a title fight. He got the same thing Michael Chandler did is what Manel Kopp did at flyweight. And then Yuri Prochazka gets who did Volkan Ozdemir and then a main event fight, and now he's going to fight for the title. I was like, give that to Gamrot. The problem is lightweight is very stacked, and it's not going to happen. But, yeah, I think he could be top five now, and I think I would watch him fight anyone in there. So, Mateus Gamrot versus blank, and that's the answer to my fight of the night.
Look at that. Throwing it down for Gamrot. What about you, Casey?
I totally agree with the Gamrot, Gamrot Ferrer. It kind of feels like, not the same exact way, but Derek Lewis and Christakis, in the sense that we know Diego Ferrer is very good, you know, an A-level lightweight. He just hasn't been able to fight. He just doesn't get that one win for the title fight. And this is a very risky fight for Ferreira. But I'm sold with everything that Jose said about Gamrot. The guy seems like the real deal. And there's just so many freaking good lightweights coming up. And I think this is kind of changing in the guard. With this new, these Gamrots, Makhachevs, who am I forgetting? The guy that beat Gamrot, Guram. Yeah. There's just so many good new, like, just killers coming into, I think, the top 10 pretty soon, lightweight. They just need to make the tie. They just need the fights to happen, and, you know, we'll see. The other fights I'm really looking forward to is Amanda Lemos and Angela Hill. Ooh, man.
That's good.
Angela
one.
Hill, you are a brave woman. You are a brave woman. Amanda Lemos, her strawweight fights, she has just looked so freaking dominant. It's just like, good Lord, this woman looks scary. I think she was a former bantamweight or strawweight or flyweight, now fighting, making weight comfortably at strawweight. She just looks vicious. I can't believe Angela Hill took this fight on short notice. But we talked to Angela.
Really? You can't believe it? Who else would do it?
Because it's Amanda Lemos. That's why. That's the only reason why. Because she doesn't have a name. I think it's only her name value. Amanda Lemos' name value. I think she's that good. But we talked to Angela Hill. I think she was on our fight companion for the Triller card. And I just asked her, like, you're crazy for taking this fight. She's like, I ain't worried. The girl's only fought grapplers. She overpowers grapplers. You know, I'm a striker. I'm gonna elbow her face up. So, God bless Angela Hill. I'm really excited for that fight to see. I don't know if it will prove how good Amanda Lemos is if she rolls through Angela Hill, but I'm just super excited by that fight. And also, freaking Darren Elkins and Cub Swanson.
There we go. That's where I was going with
that's
it.
The, that's
I can't
the
believe they haven't fought.
For. Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that's just a great fight. Darren freaking Elkins. You just we all know his the guy he wears his fighting style. He wears his chest. Yeah. Yeah, it's like
he's letting you know immediately.
Yeah.
I got a rep for the old guard here for a second, because Cub Swanson, anytime you get at this point, I felt this last week with Dominic Cruz. Anytime you get one of these WEC guys coming in here for, you know, still keeping it going and fighting at a high level, I love it. I absolutely love it. We had Cub Swanson this week. It's somehow, I don't know how this is true, but this is crazy to me. It's last Friday was the 5-year reunion or celebration, I guess, whatever, of the Doohoo Choi fight at UFC 206.
That was 5 years ago?
That was 5 years ago, bro.
Right. In Toronto, right? Yeah.
In Toronto, yeah. We were there with AK for that, and it was – I don't know how that's 5 years ago. That's nuts to me. But that was such a great fight. And Cub Swanson still in this game, still doing it. I love these WEC guys still in this game. WEC never die. I can't wait for that one. And like you said, Darren Elkins is never in a boring fight. His fights are – you know what you're getting there. Casey, we got fan questions.
Oh,
let's head to some fan questions.
Real quick, the other low-key banger is freaking the most underrated bantamweight in the UFC, I believe, with Honey. How do I say his name? Honey Barcelos. Barcelos versus newcomer to the UFC, Victor Henry. If you don't know who Victor Henry is,
your boy,
my boy. Victor Henry is supposed to, basically he was lined up to be the fight for the bantamweight championship in Ryzen. COVID happened. It kind of stalled his career out pretty hard the last year and a half or so. And he's coming in short notice against the toughest, I guess, most undervalued bantamweight in the UFC. Victor Henry is super exciting. I don't know if he's going to win or not, but I'm just happy he's in the UFC. I'm happy that American fans get to see him because he's a great personality and a super exciting fighter and a Josh Barnett protege. So bring some of that catch wrestling into the UFC. So make sure you tune in early for that. But now to the questions.
Also, Casey, you were in on this early. If you guys go out and check the MMA Fighting YouTube channel years back, Casey did a wonderful profile on Victor Henry way before anybody knew about him. So go check that out before Saturday.
Thank you. All right, to the questions. What do we got here?
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out. Yep. Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAC.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
You want to read that,
Sean? Joseph says, could Chris Dawkins be in line for a title shot in 2022 with a win over Black Beast? He's 4-4 in the UFC. We hit on this quite a bit in the beginning of the show, but I could see it. It really depends on Stipe, and it really depends on John Jones, right? Those are the two sort of lingering questions in this heavyweight division. We don't really know when either of them are going to come back. But Chris Dawkins is right there, man. We have Derek Lewis at 4 on our rankings, and he would jump up to that spot, I would imagine.
Ranking wise, if Chris Dawkins wins, he could get a title shot next. I don't think that's going to happen, but definitely with a victory tomorrow night and then another victory over, say, a Stipe or another top five guy, without a doubt, Chris Dawkins is in line for a title shot. Of course, got the whole John Jones things, but let's just forget about that for a moment because that just screws up everything when you talk about John Jones.
I'm gonna say early 2023. I think 2022 is a little muddled at heavyweight. There's too many names to get through.
That's fair. Also, if he loses,
He's fighting Derek freaking Lewis.
lot of ifs. Here we go. This the biggest storyline right now.
Oh my gosh, how do we not mention this? I don't know how to pronounce this person's name, so I'm not even going to try. I'm sorry. but he says, congratulations to Justin Toffa for making history today. How do we not mention this? Justin Toffa, a very dubious bit of UFC history. Congratulations, the first heavyweight ever in history to miss weight in the UFC. 267 pounds, 1 pound over the limit. Are you guys disappointed? You impressed? What do you make of this? I don't even know how to process this, frankly, when I saw this.
We thought it was going to be Greg Hardy. Remember, it was almost Greg Hardy a few weeks back. But no, Justin Toffa takes it. Congratulations. Oh, this is amazing. Gives up 20% of his fight purse to make history. God bless you, sir.
Man. Jose, you disappointed? No. You impressed? How do you handle this?
I feel bad for the guy because I remember when he lost to Carlos Felipe, I don't remember who, someone like he lost a he quote, and I'm using quotes because that was a split and that could have gone either way. I don't remember who I scored because it was on the Holloway Cater fight. And after that fight, I don't remember anything else about that night. But that was the only thing I do remember is they kind of leaned on each other's foreheads and punched each other for like 25 minutes. And they did. And then he lost. And I was talking to, I think it was his manager or someone else, like at the hotel. And he was like really disappointed because that was like the last fight in his contract. And he was making like 10 and 10 or something like that. And if he had won, he would have got to renegotiate and get more. But because he lost, now he's going to get like 12 and 12 maybe or something like that. And now he's fined 20% and he's in the record books. And if he loses, he's probably going to lose his job. It's just a rough situation all around for Justin Taffa. Heavyweights that go to decisions don't usually last long in the UFC. If he loses, I would have to imagine we're not going to see him inside the octagon anymore. So feel bad for the guy.
I feel bad for him, but just when you weigh that much, how can you not lose one more pound? That's crazy to me. Shave your head, something. I don't even know whatever it takes. Yeah, I guess
it was only 1 pound. It wasn't like he came at 174 or something. Like, okay, you know, that's a lot of weight to drop, but 1 pound, man, that's a run. Put some sweats on, run it down the stairs a few times. I don't know. It's just
amen. There's a first time for everything, I guess. we just saw it.
But also, why the hell do we even have a heavyweight limit? And why is it 265? It's just, who came up with 265? Why is that the number? Why not 275? Why not 280? Why not 290? Why not 250? What's
260? If you want to go down that road, all of this is incredibly arbitrary. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. It's like 265. Like we have like 10 pounds between weight classes, 15 pounds between weight classes, 20 pounds between weight classes, and like 90 pounds. I don't know, whatever. Was that 55 pounds? Is that 206 to...
That's 60 pounds.
Yeah, 60 pounds. It's a 60-pound weight class. It's like, I don't understand that, but here we are. I don't know why they...
One of my long-held dreams has always been that somehow enough super heavyweight talent will come into this where we can get 400-pound monsters fighting in here. I'm here for the circus. Like, line me up for that. But
400-pound monsters in the small apex and just... I'm waiting for that door to fall.
The cage would just crumble, yeah. It's not going to happen. All right, we're approaching an hour here, so let's get a few more quick ones and then we'll get out.
Here we go. Another from Joseph Bosa.
Another one from Joseph Bosa. He says, earlier in the week it came out that Macy versus Raquel is actually now a women's featherweight fight. Is this because Juliana shocked the world and beat Amanda at 269, or is it something up? No, I would assume just because it was a short notice fight, and we saw today Macy did not even make weight for the she didn't even make weight for the featherweight fight. That's a rough go for her.
Is that fight on? Did Raquel take the fight? Do we know?
I don't know. We've been doing this, so I'm not sure about this.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Raquel actually passes on that fight. That kind of sucks for her. Macy's already a super big bantamweight. She was originally a featherweight, and now she's coming in very heavy as a featherweight against Raquel, who's always been bantamweight her entire career. So I would not blame Raquel for passing on this fight if she does take it. God bless her. But this fight doesn't really mean anything, does it? To the bantamweight division? What does it mean?
They get a paycheck. That's about it.
It means a paycheck. But like, I feel win or lose, even if Macy wins or Macy loses, Raquel, it's just a paycheck. This fight's kind of meaningless now, right?
Yeah, no.
In terms of rankings and who's next for Pena or anything like that, yeah.
I think at this point, though, for Macy, anything helps because she is just – it's been so hard for her to get into the octagon. If she doesn't get this one, that's 2 years in a row with just one fight a year. Ooh. You know, that's not what you want.
And her apartment fell on top of her. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, it's been a rough go for her, man. I feel bad for that situation. All right, let's hit one more and then we'll get
out of here. One more.
Yes.
He answered this.
This gentleman says,
Oh, sorry.
He did. He answered it. This gentleman says, will Wonder Boy still be called Wonder Boy at age 40? I believe he was asked this at Media Day, right? And he said that I can change my name to Wonder Man if Tenacious D writes a song called Wonder Man, which is fair. I can accept that.
He also answered Jose Young's before his Gilbert Burns fight about that exact answer. And he said, yeah, I'm Wonder Boy. I'm not going to be Wonder Man, period. So
what's like the cutoff for this? Like, when does it become weird?
Oh, I think we're
let him live his truth.
Are we past it? Like, if he's 50, if he's 55 years old, is he still able to be called using this name? Or is it just too weird at that point?
If Tito Ortiz changes his name to the Huntington Beach Bad Man, then Wonder Boy will change his to Wonder Man.
Bad Man.
Well, he was like he changed it to like the People's Champion or something at some point, right?
I like he changed it. Not the people. He changed it.
Or as I always say when there's like boy or man or some sort of like word like that, like the assassin baby, just throw a comma in there, like Wonder, comma, boy. I love just make it with like the assassin baby. Love
I do like
bring up Josh Burnett. Josh Burnett used to be called the babyface assassin. He got rid of it. Well, he's the war master.
I'm pretty sure. You know, just, I'm pretty sure Melvin Gillard is still the young assassin, isn't he, or something like that?
Yeah, Faber, California kid. That's always one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Wonder Grandpa. Aaron in the chat's throwing out Wonder Grandpa. I kind of like the sound of that. Maybe we can convince Steven to do that someday, but we'll see.
Wonder Guy. Just make it Wonder Guy.
Wonder Guy. Wonder Dude.
That just feels creepy. All right.
Last question. Very important. From our same user, same commenter.
Oh, okay. So I don't even want to address this. He asked Spider-Man or The Matrix, what are you watching this weekend? I'm trying to get no Spider-Man spoilers in my life. I can't see that until next week. I know Jose just saw it last night. So I'm out on this one.
No spoilers, Jose. Spider-Man, worth it?
See it in theaters.
All right, there you go.
No spoilers. I went and the theater was completely sold out. And as you guys know, I get kind of jaded with superhero movies. Not that I dislike them.
No way.
they just don't do nothing for me. I had a blast. Like the crowd, I have never seen a livelier theater. Like they were so hyped, and I think that's what going to the movie theaters is all about. Like not yelling at the screen, but like standing ovations and cheers and everything. Wow. Like throughout the movie, it was an absolute blast. I can't remember the last time I had so much fun in a movie theater.
Like better than Endgame?
Without a doubt better than Endgame. Because Endgame was like you kind of knew, a lot of people kind of knew, but this one it was just like this was a love letter to Spider-Man, and it delivered on all. It hit everything I needed. Stayed semi-true to the comics, and the crowd was just absolutely bananas from beginning to end, and it was so much fun.
Man, you know what? That really sells me on the theater experience, because I really enjoy going to movie theaters just for it's a different experience and being totally focused on the movie rather than looking at your phone or whatever. This is great. I'm excited.
There was a moment, and still no spoils, there was like a moment when a character shows up and the crowd just went insane. I could see the guy's mouth moving, but I had no idea what he was saying. It was like being at like a sporting event. I couldn't hear this TV. And I was fourth row, and I couldn't hear what was happening.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun.
They got Phoenix.
Look at that. You can't. There is honestly no greater endorsement that a comic book movie could get than hearing that kind of feedback from Jose Young. So now I'm even more excited for this. But hey. Everybody who has stuck with us all year, we appreciate you guys so much. As we said, this is the last preview show of the year.
Not technically. We do have a preview show coming out in a couple hours with our boy Mike Heck and Eric Hawani.
Great point. Also, as I forgot to mention this, guys. Did you guys know the next UFC fight night, Giga Chikadze versus Calvin Kattar, is the 200th fight night in UFC history?
Look at that.
That's a number.
200. That is a number. That is not a prime number.
These are the type of fun facts you come to the MMA Fighting Preview shows for. We love you guys so much. Thanks to everyone who tuned in this year, today, all of it, and made us a part of your day, made us a part of your year, all of it. Thank you. We can't thank you enough. That man to my left is Jose Youngs. Man to my right, he is the best producer in the business, E.K. Slayton. I am Sean Oshadi. We have got lots more coming to you this weekend. As Casey said, Mike Heck's out there in Tampa with our boy Ariel. We got fights out in Vegas. Final card of the year. So much going on. We love you guys. Have a great rest of your day. Have a happy holidays. Keep it locked to MMA Fighting, and we'll see you soon.
listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.